This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, May the 24th, 2013. Hello, and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, in which we'll be reading extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending May the 24th, 2013. Our editors this week are Irene Dowding and Bill Argos. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for today, and our readers, as ever, are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
We'll get started with what's on. There's quite a lot to tell you about this week. But I'm going to begin with Winchester Talking Newspaper news. We are having our AGM on Monday, the 10th of June, at 3:30 p.m. in the Chesil Theatre. And that's going to be followed by an annual garden party, which will be in the beautiful gardens of Chesil House. You may be interested. The guest speaker is 18-year-old Adam Knott, who with his brother David was a Paralympic contender last year in the sport of goalball. Adam and David were born with the condition oculocutaneous albinism, and both very, very brave and talented young men. It will be interesting to hear what they have to say to us. The next item concerns the Chesil Theatre. And on Thursday, the 30th of May, they are running an entertaining fashion show. And they'll be displaying some lovely designer clothes at reasonable prices from the clothesline in Winchester. And most interestingly, a selection of the wonderful costumes from the Chesil's extensive wardrobe. Tickets cost £12.50, but for that you get a glass of wine and canapés. And the reception at 7:15 will include live music from the Flute Trio. And tickets can be booked on this number coming up, 0844 8700 887. That's 0844 8700 887. Or if you want further information and want to talk to somebody about it, the telephone number to ring is 01 962 861758. That's 01 962 861758. And other items of entertainment for your interest is Theatre Royal in Winchester. Two Gentlemen of Verona, Shakespeare's play, of course, from June the 11th to the 15th. Box office there is 01962 840440. And then at the Nuffield Theatre in Southampton, June the 11th to the 15th, again, a lot going on that week, HMS Pinafore and Trial by Jury. Box office there is 023 80 67 1771. June the 11th to the 22nd, a longer run, at the Mayflower in Southampton, we have Cats, a wonderful show. Very colourful, beautiful to see. And the box office number there is 023 8071 1811. I'm going to give you those box office numbers again. The Winchester Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. The Nuffield Theatre, Southampton, 02380 671 771. And the Mayflower, Southampton, 02380 71 1811. And music for your entertainment in the area. On Friday, May the 31st, the college concert in New Hall is Mozart, Beethoven. It starts at 7:30. on Saturday, June the 1st, a brass and voice spectacular concert at Romsey Abbey. That's at 7:30 p.m. It's the Michelmersh Silver Band with the Caldecott Male Voice Choir, and that's in aid of the band funds. Reserved tickets are £15 and £12, and the unreserved tickets are £10. And you can get those from the Romsey Tourist Office, 01794 512 987. And one more concert, that's on June the 4th. This is a lunchtime concert at Winchester Cathedral. It begins at 1 o'clock. It's the Ditley Rindom Piano, Beethoven, Schumann, Franck, and it's free with just a retiring collection. That's at Winchester Cathedral. And then, assuming we ever do get any good weather, I can recommend an open garden for you, and this is in Romsey. That's open on May the 26th and 27th. It's a small, attractive market town, as you probably know, with a notable Norman Abbey, which forms the backdrop to 4 Mill Lane, and that's King John's Garden, and the Lake House. They're within walking distance of Romsey Abbey, and they're well worth looking at. They're open at 11 until 5:30. The combined admission price is £6, and you have plants for sale and teas. Well, that's all pretty lovely stuff for this time of the year. And now I'm going to give you lighting up time. On Friday, the 24th of May, lighting up time began at 4 minutes past 5 a.m. and ends at 6 minutes past 9 p.m. On Wednesday, the 29th of May, the sun comes up at 4:59 a.m. with lights out at 9:09 p.m. And as usual, we'll say, if you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And of course, you know that if you want to skip any item on the recording, you just press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move on to another track. The main headlines this week are fears over loss for public open space, saying thanks for our little miracle, and app to tackle hate crime. Claire has the first headline story, please. Claire, thank you.
Fears over loss of public open space. Winchester Civic Chiefs look set to press on with controversial schemes to build homes on open spaces in Abbots Barton and Wick, despite fears that precious recreation space will be lost forever. Opponents say the proposals will eat into already inadequate public open space and play areas. There should be 60 hectares of play space in the district, but there is only 18.8, a 59% shortfall. There should be 46 hectares of sports grounds, but there is 19.6, 57% shortfall. One opponent, who declined to be named, argued the schemes would destroy vital green lungs. Winchester City is massively down on the amount of open space it should have. These parks serve a much wider area than just Abbots Barton. The council has the attitude that Abbots Barton is a council estate, the park therefore only serving council tenants, and that therefore it is perfectly entitled to appropriate the land for housing. City councillors were set to approve on Wednesday, 22nd May, the first steps to develop 3 grassy areas in Abbots Barton at Dyson Drive, Hillier Way, and part of the main park on Chandler Road. The City Council also wants to develop a play area and 10 garages off Westman Road in Wick. It is part of plans to build 300 council homes over the next 10 years, the first in the district since the late 1980s. The Housing Delivery Committee was expected to agree that it wants to develop the land and will be advertising its intentions. Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for Housing and New Homes, said, "Families have to wait 6 years for a three-bed house. This affects a wide range of people, from young local people looking for a home for the first time to working families needing a larger house or older people needing a more suitable home. The building of affordable housing is a priority for the council. More affordable housing can benefit the wider community and the local economy. The new homes are being built due to a genuine housing need and no profit will be made." One potential weapon against development looks to have stalled. A bid to register land at Dyson Drive as a village green has yet to be formally advertised because of a backlog of such applications. At Westman Road, residents are divided on losing a play area and garages. Jessica Klingsheim, 45, said, "With Barton Farm coming in, this is the only green space in the area, and it's used a lot by the community. There are always children playing football or basketball. It's the one place that teenagers can go around here. If you have 2,000 houses coming in over the road, why do you need to build a few houses here?" Mrs. Klingsheim, a physiotherapist, said her husband Leif was looking to launch a website to raise awareness of the plans and gather opposition. But neighbour Anna de Schutter said, "I understand why they are looking at this site, because people need places to live. I just hope they are not tall buildings." Anne Weir, Lib Dem ward councillor, said residents were keen to see more housing for the elderly. She said, "This has been on the cards for maybe a decade and has been discussed by the Tenants and Residents Association. People want this land for accommodation for older people or those who need to downsize. It's not well used as a playground and it is landlocked. I have not heard anyone come out against this plan." The council's open space strategy is alive to the need for more land for sport, and three sites have been earmarked: Bushfield Camp between Stockbridge Road and Littleton Road, and north and west of Courtney Road. Meanwhile, the city is formally launching its new build programme with final approval set for schemes at Bourne Close, Otterbourne, that's £431,000, and Station Close, Itchen Abbas, £676,000. They will provide 8 homes.
Saying thanks for our little miracle. When Dawn and Dan Vardy were told their daughter Jessica had a rare and aggressive form of cancer, it was the worst Christmas nightmare they could have imagined. The Bishop's Waltham parents thought they were going to lose their 5-year-old daughter when doctors at Southampton General Hospital discovered a tumour the size of an orange in her armpit. 6 months later, and following intensive chemotherapy, the Swanmore Primary School pupil is looking at making a full recovery after the tumour has shrunk by more than 75%. To show their support for Jessica, people across her community are taking part in a series of fundraising events. Dozens of family friends from around the village will join Jessica and Dawn for the Race for Life in Winchester on Sunday, June the 9th, for cancer research and for the P.M. Brown ward at Southampton General Hospital. Other friends will also be taking part in a Tough Mudder South assault course at Matterley Bowl near Winchester on the same weekend, and the Great South Run later in the year. An initial target of £1,000 was smashed in a week, and now Jessica's friends and family want to raise as much as they can after the emotional roller coaster they have been through. A year ago, one day before her fifth birthday, Jessica started waking up in the night screaming with nerve pain in her left hand. The little girl had to give up gymnastics, swimming and ballet because the pain was too much to bear. After months of tests, it was eventually discovered that the pain was caused by a large cancerous lump, known as a rhabdoid tumour, which only two children a year in the UK are diagnosed with. "It's the last thing you think of as a parent," said the 35-year-old mum. "You don't want to think about it. We honestly thought it was a muscular pain or some kind of nerve damage. It was an emotional roller coaster. At last we knew what was causing the pain, but then we found out it was this rare form of cancer." Now, Jessica is a walking miracle. They said that she had a year to live. They said they would do all they can, but there's little hope of her lasting more than a year. But the tumour had shrunk by 75% at the last scan, and we had another one 2 weeks ago, and it has shrunk further. We just don't know by how much. "Now the doctors are using the word cure," added Dawn. To help raise money for the cause, visit justgiving.com/Dawn-Vardy1 or justgiving.com/Dawn-Vardy. And the piece is illustrated with a photograph showing Jessica with Mum Dawn and supporters.
App to tackle hate crime. It's the disgusting crime suffered in silence by most. Assault, threats, and abuse against a person for how they look, the colour of their skin, or what they believe is thought to be a daily occurrence in Hampshire and beyond. But the true picture has never been known. Now police, prosecutors, community leaders and representatives from the sporting world have united in a bid to finally break down barriers and get victims to stand up to their aggressors with a revolutionary new mobile phone app to tackle hate crime. It is the latest tool in the war on people who show prejudice or hatred to someone else because of their ethnicity, disability, sexual orientation, religion, gender or age. Unveiled last week at a launch at Hampshire's Aegeus Bowl cricket ground, it is thought to be a first for policing in England and Wales, with the sole aim of educating more people about how they can get help, particularly targeting women and youths. John Montague, Deputy Chief Crown Prosecutor for CPS Wessex, revealed that between January and March this year, there have been 6 cases of disability hate crime, 20 homophobic crimes, and 147 incidents of racial or religiously aggravated crime, but said that the figures did not represent an accurate picture, as far more go unreported. He said that while progress was being made to tackle the problem, there was far more to be done, and that the app was a step towards that. The app, launched in conjunction with Hampshire Cricket Community Trust, was the brainchild of police officer PC Ahmed Sasso, who has been tirelessly working to break down barriers in communities and comes just a year after Hampshire Police released a book dedicated to helping victims of hate crime.
Thank you for those headline stories. We're going to read the death notices next, and then after that, Claire will follow with Christian comment. Now, it is my very sad duty to announce the death of one of the team of Winchester Talking Newspapers, in fact, a member of the editing team of this very group you're hearing today. His name is Gardner, Vernon Gardner, and he was 90 years old. He died on the 13th of May, and he's been an editor on Winchester Talking Newspaper for over 20 years. And he will be very much missed by us, and I'm sure by his friends and, of course, his family. And I'm going to hand over now to the rest of the team to read the death comments.
The next one on the list is Bailey, Cecil Bailey, peacefully, 19th of May, age 78.
Bert, David Roger Bert, peacefully on the 16th of May, aged 65.
Hill, Doreen May Hill, peacefully, 6th of May, aged 86.
Gerard, Dr. H. G. Jerry Gerard, former leader and mayor of Fareham Borough Council, peacefully, on the 10th of April, aged 91.
Maskell, Ivy Gwendolyn Grace Maskell, peacefully, 11th May, aged 93.
Morfitt, Michael Richard Morfitt, peacefully, 18th of May, aged 74.
Neil, Percy Neil, 9th of May.
Nightingale, Monica Irene Nightingale, on the 14th of May, aged 74.
Phillips, Walter, Wally Phillips, on the 18th of May.
Stanford, Doris Stanford, née Newman, peacefully, 12th of May, in Scotland.
Thurley, Joyce Thurley, peacefully, 12th of May, aged 86.
Walker, James Stuart Walker, 13th of May, aged 85.
Waller, Edward, Ted Waller, retired Ordnance Survey, 8th of May.
Webb, Chris Webb, unexpectedly, 16th of May.
And now Claire will give us Christian comment, please.
Which today is written by Roland Ream, who's Canon Chancellor and Pastor, Winchester Cathedral. And it's headed, "We must not do nothing." We cannot do everything, but we must not do nothing. This was the stirring call to action delivered by the founder of the Humanitarian Aid Relief Trust, a small charity working in Uganda, Burma, East Timor, and many other places across the world. The founder is a remarkable woman who calls herself an eyewitness to a broken world, a nurse, social scientist, and member of the House of Lords. Caroline Cox is certainly someone who has been unafraid to involve herself wherever she has seen oppression and injustice. But Winchester and Uganda are not very similar, and not doing nothing here must take a very different form. At the recent Churches Together in Winchester AGM, Christians from different congregations across the district started talking about what they could achieve in their different localities. One possibility was setting up credit unions to address the mounting problem of debt. Another area for joint action would be ageing. At the 2011 census, nearly 19% of our population was over 65, and nearly 3% over 85. A surprise email came from America from an 89-year-old man who had trouble to write about how the years had affected him. His catalogue of diminishments, from sleep deprivation to reduction in speech comprehension, made for sobering reading. We must indeed not do nothing. Attitudinal change is necessary. Those who are younger, often the children of elderly parents, must learn to be patient of their general slowness and greater inactivity, and understanding of their wish to retain psychological independence from carers. But we can also do something positive. Certainly the churches themselves have many older members who still play an active role in volunteering. We often have to build support around those roles. Last Sunday, I noticed a young man setting a heavy coffee urn in place so that someone in her 80s could pour it for guests after the service. We can help those who are grounded in the old services. 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning is challenging for those who want to worship using the familiar words of the Book of Common Prayer, which is why midday on a Thursday has become a popular alternative. The differences that we can make are small and begin with an awareness of what we are not doing. And whatever we did, we would be much the richer for noticing the daily heroism of the elderly, living with and overcoming limitation. And that was written by Roland Ream.
Thank you, Claire. And we have 6 letters to the editor this week, and we're going to go to Robin for the first of them. Thank you, Robin.
One budget cut we could all agree. I'm writing in the desperate hope there is one person with the clout and the wit at Hampshire County Council who will see this and do something about its crazy verge trimming policy. Every year it's the same. The cow parsley is barely out when along comes a contractor and strips the road's edge bare. Not just at the sight lines where it is advisable, but all along the country lanes, slashing to the roots every tiny little plant that dares to stick its head up. Not only does this ridiculous policy mean fewer flowers for bees and insects and me to enjoy, it means that every year there are fewer flowers, full stop. How this fits in with HCC's constant grinding on about caring for the environment, I'm not sure, just as I'm not sure why the county is so keen to slash budgets for the things that people want them to spend money on, but seems terminally incapable of taking the axe to ones they don't, like verge trimming. It may seem like a small thing, but added up, these verges amount to hectares of habitat for insects and small animals, and they are being systematically trashed. I've complained about this before to HCC, but as usual, the complaints have apparently fallen into the black hole of stuff we're not interested in. Maybe the new councillors will not be as arrogant as the old ones, and will take up this challenge to make a budget cut we could all agree with. F. Eckersall, Shirrell Heath.
And another letter about ecological matters from Phil Dowson. It is with deep disappointment that I read EDF's planning application for giant wind turbines on the high ground between Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover. The moving blades of these mega structures would be clearly visible from each town, and as you approach Sutton Scotney and Mitchell Dever, the enormity of these landscape-dominating pylons will be truly jaw-dropping. Respected scientists and environmentalists have cast serious doubts on the efficiency of onshore wind in the not very windy south of England. The major cost to individuals and businesses through increased energy bills serves only to line the pockets of enormous multinationals and landowners, while providing an increasingly unconvincing fig leaf for politicians eager to demonstrate green credentials. In truth, The money generated by inflated energy bills is being cynically siphoned away from investment in true renewable solutions. The gamble being taken by EDF is that by submitting planning applications now, they will get ahead of the building momentum to stop the outrageous industrialisation of rural Britain. When the shutters come down, like feed-in tariffs for industrial solar, they hope to be protected by virtue of having already placed an application in process. This is a risk that EDF are fully aware of, though they and others will exercise their considerable corporate muscle to make sure they get their noses in the subsidy trough. If the man-woman on the proverbial Clapham-Winchester omnibus feels that this is unacceptable, then direct action through transfer of individual utility contracts for gas and electricity bills away from EDF will give them a stronger message. Phil Dowson, Andover Road, Mitchell Dever.
This letter is headed Gambling with Taxpayers' Money. Sir, I have read with interest your coverage of the proposals for the redevelopment of Stanmore, including the latest Surrey chapter, Chronicle May 16th, which seems to indicate an end to the proposals. The question is, though, if the Council have purchased the new Queen's Head with taxpayers' money, what do they propose to do with it now? Surely a wiser approach would have been to agree a deal subject to the whole plan moving forward, rather than buying in hope. That way would not only have protected a large sum of our money, but also meant that they would have been receiving an income from the owners in the form of non-domestic rates. There seems to be a shortage of commercial understanding in the Council, and a willingness to gamble with taxpayers' money at a time of hardship for many. It may also be deemed their responsibility to maintain the appearance of the site now they own it. Perhaps a regular mow of the grass, cut the hedges, and maybe allow the overcrowded streets a bit of relief by opening up the car park to public use. After all, if we taxpayers own it, it's the least we should expect. Bob Grant, Stanmore Lane, Winchester.
This letter is from John and Wendy Hunt of Winchester and has the heading Catherine Touched So Many Lives. Reference your court report about the fatal car crash on January the 28th, 2013. May we take this opportunity to thank your reporter for the sensitive way he reported on the inquest held at Alton on May the 1st, re the above accident. Catherine Hunt of Alsford was our wonderful, precious, beautiful daughter. We were not at the inquest, as we knew it would be very painful for us to hear things which were better not to hear. We would also like to thank the two gentlemen through your newspaper who went to help at the scene of the accident. We felt we owed it to Catherine that people who read the report should know just a little bit more about her. She was a precious, thoughtful, lovely daughter with whom we shared some wonderful times, and even though she lived in Alsford and we in Winchester, if we didn't see her that particular day, there would be frequent text messages from her. She was also sister, auntie, cousin, and a loyal friend and work colleague. She was the love of Rob's life, whom she was to have married this year. Catherine and her dad and I are members of the Winchester Family Church, and we held a Thanksgiving service for Catherine's life at the church in Middlebrook Street in February. Around 400 people were present, two lots of people coming from France and others from various places in the country. Some of her work colleagues, her church friends, and her cousins and her dad paid tribute to Catherine. Each tribute stated that Catherine was as beautiful on the inside as she was on the outside, and every one of them remembered her beautiful smile, which lit up the room when she came in. Catherine touched many lives throughout her short life. And although she never realized it herself, she was so special, and we felt we wanted those who read this report to know this also. As I've been writing this, I can hear Catherine's voice saying to me, as she often did, "I love you, Mum." John and Wendy Hunt, Water Lane, Winchester.
This letter from Tony Wyman is headed, "If we make it more difficult for visitors, they will go elsewhere." I am mystified as to why the Green MEP Keith Taylor believes that shutting city centre car parks is a benefit to anyone, or even meets green objectives. When will local politicians stop indulging themselves in grabbing headlines and start proposing policies that will be to the benefit of the community? Winchester does not have an absolute right to visitors and shoppers. If we make it more difficult for them to come, then they will go elsewhere. Park and ride is fine for city centre workers and visitors that are making a day out, but for the shopper that wants to spend only an hour or two in town, the extra time and bus fare is not justifiable. Many will go to West Quay instead. Winchester shops are already under stress, and few, especially the independents, will be able to survive the further loss of custom implied by closing more car parks. In turn, even more shoppers, finding Winchester a less attractive destination, will go elsewhere, thus creating both a downward spiral and an increase in car journeys. Far from reducing Hampshire's carbon footprint, closing Winchester car parks will increase the number and length of car journeys and increase overall pollution. What we need from our politicians are joined-up policies that benefit the economy and the environment. We need to regulate our buses in the same way that they're regulated in London and subsidise them to increase use and decrease the need for car journeys. We need to ban through traffic from Winchester and stop the pollution that results from the standing traffic in St George's Street. We all know that turning off the High Street, Southgate Street traffic lights and giving no one priority reduces pollution and makes the town better for everyone. Why isn't this done? Of course, what Winchester really needs is a western relief road from Pitt to the Stockbridge Road. Then we could block the whole town centre to through traffic. But I would expect the Greens to object to that as well. Tony Wyman, Childhood's Dream, Southgate Street, Winchester.
Towns can survive with less parking. Sir, in your May 16 edition, you quoted Roger Huckstep as saying, "There is a balance between emissions and running a local economy," as if he is worried that high levels of traffic are necessary for Winchester to remain prosperous. Roger need not worry. The latest research suggests that there are extremely successful cities that have chosen to exclude or reduce traffic. Even the Association of Town and City Management said recently, "There is evidence that suggests that towns and cities can thrive in cases where parking has been significantly reduced." Perhaps they were thinking of Oxford, where parking reduction at the start of the century was followed by increased footfall. John Lewis has not been deterred from taking a key part in the major new shopping development. Your same edition suggests public transport can play a major role. It is good news that 4.4 million passengers now pass through Winchester Railway Station and that the numbers continue to grow, while car use declines. Much of this growth is in people visiting Winchester, and their cars no longer clog up our streets. The exceptional increase of 13.9% at Shawford must reflect the extensive efforts of the local rail user group and South West Trains. Similar efforts should be made to publicise and improve the service between South Hampshire and Winchester. This would set the scene for reducing traffic within the walls of Winchester, so that even St. George's Street would feel like a good place to be. As a taster, I recommend the tranquility of the square. Miraculously freed from the tyranny of illegal rat runners for as long as the works continue in Great Minster Street. If anything, the footfall has grown. Let's hope the arrangement will be made permanent. Phil Gagg, Fairfield Road, Full Flood.
Thank you, everyone, for the letters to the editor this week. Now, if you'd like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can ring 01962 860 836. Again, that's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And you could, of course, always write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we have historical items, and I'm going to begin with 200 years. House of Lords, Wednesday, May the 19th. The House met to hear the appeal case of McAdam and Adam. This is a very important case with a view to the Scottish law of marriage. Mr. McAdam, a gentleman of very large fortune in Ayrshire, kept a mistress in his house for some years and had children by her. One morning, he called the servants into the room where he and his kept mistress were at breakfast, and taking her by the hand, declared in their presence that she was his wife. That same day he shot himself. The question is whether this is a valid marriage and consequently the children legitimate. Upon the decision of this question depends the succession to a real estate of £10,000. Saturday morning, a court-martial was held at Portsmouth on Samuel Hood for stealing a plate from Captain Bingham of His Majesty's ship Egmont. He was sentenced to receive 200 lashes. David Wilson of His Majesty's ship Tigre was tried for disobedience of orders, and the charge was proved. But it appearing that the prisoner was an American-born subject, and his conduct in other respects had been exemplary, the court determined that no punishment should take place.
"100 years ago, May 1913. Young quarryman survives 40-foot fall. A terrible alternative presented itself on Saturday to William Else, a young quarryman of Wirksworth. Else, working on a narrow ledge of rock high up on the quarry face, was levering at a loosened stone when his crowbar slipped, causing him to stagger backwards. Confronted with the alternative of jumping down the quarry or falling headlong, he chose the former and leapt for a narrow ledge of rock 40 foot below. He alighted on his feet, and strange to state, his only injuries were 2 dislocated ankles and shock. He is progressing favourably.
50 years ago, May the 25th, 1963. Council's Green Belt Plan queried. Hampshire County Council's claim that further developments between Hedge End and Southampton would lessen the effectiveness of the proposed Green Belt was queried at a local inquiry at Winchester on Tuesday into an appeal against the refusal of planning permission for the erection of 32 houses. Mr. P.D.T. Powell was appearing at the inquiry for Mrs. M.E. Cull, who wished to build at Hill Farm, Netley Furze Road. Several local residents appeared to support the refusal of planning permission. And the second item, Although plans have been made for increased accommodation for patients at Southampton General Hospital, the management committee fear that the allocation of new beds will still be insufficient to meet demands. A committee meeting was told in a report on Thursday that it was quite evident that the current number of beds available was totally inadequate for the demands being made on them. One of the greatest needs was for more antenatal beds. The committee heard that the birth rate in Southampton last year was the highest it had ever been, higher than the post-war bulge of 1947-8. Alderman Mrs. V.F. King, chairman, said, "It may be that we shall have to have an increase in the number of our maternity beds. We are very worried about the position."
25 years ago, May 20th, 1988, planning backlog closes phones. East Hampshire planners are so overworked that they haven't got time to answer the phone, and that's official. The District Council has announced that for 4 days, the first being yesterday, Thursday, the planning department will be closed to the public from 3 p.m. unless prior appointments have already been made, and no telephone calls will be accepted. The other 3 days on which this applies will be Tuesday, May 24th, Tuesday, May 31st, and Thursday, June 2nd. The council says there is a considerable backlog of work building up in the planning department because of a tremendous increase in the number of planning applications. And the next item. There is to be a public inquiry into the plan by Hall Aggregates to extract sand and gravel from Kimbridge Farm, Dunbridge Lane, Mottisfont. The move, announced last week by the government, has been welcomed locally. The planning proposal, which also sought to transport minerals by conveyor belt to a distribution point at Stony Marsh, Mittelmersh, came before the County Council last year. The meeting was lobbied by members of SAVE, Save Our Valleys Environment, a local pressure group opposed to the development.
Thank you. And now the next item is the Chronicle's going out into the high streets and talking to people about various topics, and Jerry has that one this time.
Your say. We asked, should some city centre car parks be closed to help tackle air pollution problems? Ron Hughes, 85, a retired engineer of Westman Road, said, I am concerned about car parks, but I think they should get rid of the parking in Stony Lane in Week first. People try to cross the road, but traffic never stops. Shirley Hollenby, 73, retired catering supervisor of Stony Lane Week, said, I think the council should get rid of some car parks because there are a lot in the city already. I prefer to walk anyway, and it would be better if more people did. Jenny Brown, 62, retired post office clerk of Haydon Close Kingsworthy, said, I think there's just enough car parking in Winchester and there should not be any change. The problem in the city is St George's Street. That's where all the traffic gets clogged. Vincent Moroni, 64, retired shipping consultant of Stockers Avenue Takedown, said, the idea is good, and people would subscribe to it, but they wouldn't like the reality. We're caught between having a pretty city centre with no one in it, or a busy one that's unpleasant.
And editorial comment is next. And we had a letter from a gentleman called Tony Wyman, whose shop, Childhood's Dream, is the subject of some of his dissent, I think we have to say. And the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle is responding to that. It headed, landlords must do more to help business. Tony Wyman raises interesting points about the future of high streets in general, and Winchester's in particular. He said that in September he and his wife Sue will not renew the lease for their childhood's dream toy shop that has traded on Southgate Street since 2009. Mr. Wyman sees the future for independent shops as a hybrid of mainly online, with a three-month period of opening a pop-up shop in the run-up to Christmas. And pop-up shops certainly offer a welcome use of empty units in recession-hit times, but it's difficult to see them as a long-term solution. Most shoppers want to see independent shops survive year-long. The trouble with online shopping is its rootlessness. The face of shopping in Winchester is clearly changing, but the prophets of doom are wrong. Independent shops will remain and thrive in Winchester because there is a critical mass of local people who will support them. But these local shops would certainly be helped if property owners lowered their sights and charged less rent. If the landlords took a longer-term realistic view and nurtured their tenants, everyone would benefit. And the next item is first person, and Robin will give us that, please. Thank you.
First person this week is by George Hayter, with the title A Convincing Duet at the Castle. Conservative Roy Perry, the new leader of the County Council, has a way with the chat. I remember a speech he made 20 years ago. In those days, Mr. Perry was leader of Test Valley Borough Council, a small authority with a microscopic budget. I was in the borough's council chamber at Romsey when he rose to contribute to a debate about a golf course. The rather humdrum occasion was a committee meeting where the topic was an application for planning permission from the golf course, which wanted to expand from 9 holes to 18. One by one, members of the committee condemned the plan to double the size of the course, saying that by taking over neighbouring fields, it would eat away at what little was left of the countryside, separating the market town of Romsey from the encroaching urban sprawl of Southampton. A hush descended on councillors and officials, as instead of attacking the idea of a bigger golf course, Mr. Perry spoke in favour. He calmly suggested that establishing a larger and therefore more viable golf course on the land would in the long term be a surer way of blocking Southampton's expansion towards Romsey. Then he quietly sat down. The vote was taken, and the councillors voted for the golf course's expansion. Years later, I reminded Mr. Perry of that remarkable turnaround, but he did little more than shrug. Whether that was because of modesty, or because he so often performed such persuasive feats that he couldn't remember that particular one, I'm not sure. One thing I do know is that in his new position as boss of the ruling Tories in Hampshire, his chief opponent is a man who can be just as persuasive. Lib Dem Keith House, leader of the biggest opposition group, has a talent for changing the minds of voters in particular. If you look at his record, you will see what I mean. When he took over the leadership of the Lib Dem group on Eastleigh Borough Council, the group had just 19 seats in the chamber there. Now, after 21 years of Mr. House's leadership, the Lib Dems have 40. There are only 4 seats they don't have. That overwhelming conquest marks out Mr. House as a local politician of substance. Both Mr. Perry and Mr. House have tried, but failed, to become MPs. There is little doubt in my mind that, had circumstances been different and they had reached Westminster, they would both have made good members. Perhaps they would have risen up the ranks to become party spokesmen in the Commons. Now that both their parties are in coalition government, is it even possible that instead of feuding in Hampshire, They would both now be discussing joint policy at the cabinet table in Downing Street.
Westminster Diary this week comes from Steve Brine, and Claire's going to be his voice for us this week.
He's starting. Last week, MPs were banging on about Europe. That included me, and for the record, I voted for an amendment to the Queen's speech, regretting the fact it left out a bill fixing in legislation that promised referendum on our membership of the EU in 2017. We now have that bill, as a result of our pressure, and I will be supporting my friend James Wharton, MP, when he brings his private members' bill to the House in July. I have to say, I have always thought it rather odd to promise to stop banging on about any issue of public policy, let alone on what is clearly the biggest foreign policy issue of the last 50 years. It's rather like saying we'll stop talking about the NHS or schools. I voted against my government on a three-line whip to make this point shortly after being elected. And to be fair to the PM, we've come a long way since my first rebellion. I am just still in my 30s, and I don't believe the EU is an evil empire. I'm a student of history, and I know full well it brought peace in our time after the horror of war. I know there are issues such as international crime and tackling climate change, where we need to work with our European partners. And I understand there are times when we speak louder with one voice alongside the US, Russia, and China, for instance. But I am also a Democrat, and the European project has trundled on without asking the British people for their consent since 1975. The European Union is a very different organisation than it was on my first birthday, and I think it's time we drew a line in the sand, for the EU's sake, if nothing else. That is not hard to agree with whatever your view on ever closer union. Europe, for me, should be about a single market, not a single political state. Britain is not in the Eurozone, and it's not going to be, but its existence changes things for us, and it is naive to pretend otherwise. The Prime Minister will embark on his renegotiation over Britain's membership and put the deal to the country in a simple in or out vote. I support him in that. But let's have that debate. Let's ask whether this great trading nation could survive free of the EU club. Let's see whether our government could work with the EU on crime and climate matters. Let's see whether our doctors can organise their own rotas in a way that suits our NHS, not the EU working time directive. Heck, let's even see whether we can manage to decide how we serve olive oil in Italian restaurants. In short, let's see whether Great Britain can once again be an independent nation with a parliament that decides how our country is governed. If the answer is no, we can stop banging on about Europe and start getting on with it. But let's lance this boil and move on. Much more online about my work at www.stevebrine.com, and my office is on 01962 791110.
Thank you. And that finishes the regular features which are chosen for you this week. I'm going to go back to What's On and give you another reminder about the Talking Newspapers AGM and Summer Garden Party. That's on Monday, the 10th of June, at 3:30. And in your wallets, you will find a reply slip. And we'd be very grateful, please, if you could put your name and tick the appropriate box as to yes or no, whether you're coming. And then we'll have an idea of numbers. And we really do recommend that garden party in the beautiful gardens in Chesil House. So thank you very much for that. And our next item will be general news from the Hampshire Chronicle. So the first item of general news comes this time from Jerry, please.
And is entitled, Ernie sworn in as city's 814th mayor. A Winchester City Council stalwart has become the first citizen of the district after serving the people of Alsford for 13 years. Grandfather of four, Ernie Jeffs, was voted in as the city's new mayor at the grand ceremony at the Guildhall. He described it as a great honour to be given the chains and ring of office and takes over from the previous mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson. I've done the apprenticeship, he said, as he looked forward to taking on the role with his wife Barbara as mayoress. 15 months ago I started on this mayoral journey. It seems like only yesterday, he said. It's an honour and a privilege to be the 814th mayor of Winchester and to serve the district. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. His four chosen charities for the next year are Hounds for Heroes, the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, the Scouts and Guides for Winchester, and a community pot for Alsford. An expert in electronics and radio communications, he has spent much of his career in the defence industry. His proposer, leader of the council Keith Wood, who is a keen cyclist, said, "We have high hopes of him competing in the Tour de Winchester in August this year, robes and chain flowing in the slipstream. The Sky team need to watch out." Councillor Eileen Berry was voted as deputy mayor and will be joined by her consort, Sean James. Standing down as mayor, Councillor Pearson said, "To be mayor of Winchester is a huge honour in itself. To be the mayor during the Diamond Jubilee, Olympic and Paralympic Games, is the most beyond most people's wildest dreams, mine especially." He added, "Before I hand over the responsibilities to the incoming mayor, I must pay tribute to the hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteers who make this city and this country tick." And there are photographs of both the outgoing mayor and the new mayor, Councillor Ernie Jeffs.
Mayor goes the distance at boxing club. The new mayor of Winchester's first official engagement was a bruising encounter. Before a small crowd gathered in front of the Garrison Ground Pavilion in Bar End Road, Councillor Ernie Jeffs cut the red tape to open Winchester Amateur Boxing Club last Thursday, before gamely climbing between the ropes. It's ideal for the kids and young people. It's a recreational facility that I do not think we could do without. Something like this is a great incentive to get fit too, he said. The club will be run by friends Philip Duda, Powell Swat and Sebastian Sokolowski. All three hold coaching badges from the Amateur Boxing Association. The event was the culmination of a year's planning and 3 months of refurbishment by the coaches and supportive friends. The project has the backing of Winchester City Council, which is charging peppercorn rent. The ceiling and floor of the hut both required extensive repairs, and a new ring has been installed along with various punch bags. Mr. Duda, the club secretary, works as a special needs teacher in Basingstoke during the day. He said, "We all work full time, so we were working at night and in the evenings. Every town in the UK has a boxing club, but unfortunately in Winchester for a time there was nothing. A place like this, with lots of students and young people, will benefit from an opportunity to box." Also present was Ken Charman, an ABA Southern Counties Life president, who praised the organisers. Mr. Charman said, "This club is going to flourish. There is no question about that. I've been in boxing for over 40 years and have been working with these guys for over a year now. I've never known such enthusiasm and foresight as I've seen from these young men." And the item is illustrated by a picture showing the mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernest Jeffs, at the opening of the boxing club with other principal people concerned with it.
Trusty Peugeot just keeps on going. It is the trusty motor that has cropped up enough miles to circumnavigate the earth 13 times. This beloved Peugeot 205 has amazed mechanics after reaching the astonishing milestone of 338,000 miles on the original petrol engine. The car, nicknamed Fly, was bought in 1990 by John Clive from Swanmore and passed its MOT without issue throughout its motoring life. Mr. Clive died in December last year, but his widow Penny has decided to donate the metallic blue hatchback to Eastleigh College. In recognition of this, Peugeot is making a £200 donation to the Children's Hospice Shooting Star Chase, a charity Mr. Clive cared deeply for. Mr. Clive even bought rosettes for the car to mark milestones and anniversaries. He notched up the miles by visiting relatives in Hertfordshire, driving to France for holidays, travelling to London for meetings and working in Chichester. The donation was made at the Peugeot dealership, Hamble Motors in Sholing. Mrs. Clive said John loved his 205 and he continued to be impressed by its reliability over the years. The car was really part of the family and made regular trips to London and further afield to visit friends and relatives. John also used to drive for Village Care Group, so over the years it ferried dozens of people to doctors or hospital appointments. He felt the car had been so reliable he was planning to replace it with a 208 when it would finally go no further. One of John's sons, who studied motor mechanics at school, suggested we donate the car to Eastleigh College. So we're delighted that it will continue to be valued, and the donation from Peugeot is a hugely appreciated legacy to his memory. John didn't believe in throwing things away, so I'd like to think he'd be pleased with the decision to donate the car to a good cause. But the staggering mileage doesn't come close to the world record. In 2010, American Irv Gordon reached nearly 3 million miles in his 1966 Volvo P1800. And there's a picture of Penny Clive with the dealer principal of Hamble Motors, Gary Bowers, and fellow staff looking on.
College showcases the best of the countryside. It was a celebration of the English countryside, and thousands of people turned out to enjoy it at Sparsholt College's annual Countryside Day. The spectacular grounds of the land-based college near Winchester were swarming with visitors last Saturday, with organisers estimating an attendance of anywhere up to 10,000. From the milking parlour to the climbing wall, from hedge laying to tractor rides and quad bike displays, the college honoured its pledge to show people what we do. Events coordinator Phil Holroyd-Smith said, "Basically, this is for people to have a go and to come and understand what we do and to engage with the local community." And there were plenty of students on hand to illustrate the point. Callum Hughes, 18 of Four Marks, is studying arboriculture at Sparsholt. He spent much of the day strapping youngsters into safety harnesses and hoisting them up into trees. He said, "We're sharing our knowledge with other young people and people interested in tree surgery. I went to college in Alton before I realised it wasn't for me. I needed to be doing something like this, where I'm outside. But the day belonged not only to the young. There was a reunion of old boys, too. Cyril Giles, 78, from Havant, recalled his time at Sparshall nearly 60 years ago. He said, "I really enjoyed every moment here, and it really was time well spent. When I left here, I went to work with farmers in Central Africa and had an area the size of Wales under my responsibility at one point. To see it today, it's such a change. There were only about 65 of us on campus in those days. The college now boasts almost 2,000 students studying a huge range of disciplines. The Equine Centre ran displays throughout the day, while the sport department's climbing wall saw a steady stream of visitors. Scaling things was something of a theme this year, with onlookers clearly impressed by the arboriculture students who raced up 48-foot tree trunks to show off their climbing prowess. For those less comfortable with heights, the Winchester Embroiderers Guild was celebrating its 50th anniversary with a series of presentations and a buffet, while visitors were also serenaded by the Army Wives Choir. And there are 7 photographs, lovely photographs, showing all the various activities that went on during the day and people having a wonderful time generally.
Peregrine falcon chicks hatch in city. Joy as rare birds spotted in rooftop nest box. A pair of rare peregrine falcon chicks has hatched in Winchester, contributing to the county's population. Months after the Hampshire Ornithological Society, HOS, was allowed to set up a nest box on the roof of the Hampshire Police Headquarters in Romsey Road, a male and female have hatched. Keith Betton, county bird recorder at the HOS, has placed rings on the birds' talons so that they can monitor their progress and keep track of the numbers of birds of prey in Hampshire. He said the arrival of the chicks was excellent news, and the environment of the nest box was helping the chicks to cope well. They had just eaten. They were quite plump, and they are doing quite well, he said. There's no chance of them starving. There are pigeons all around the place. It's an ideal location because nobody can get up there. There's no westerly rain, so they don't get wet, and there's no westerly sun, so they won't get too hot. Peregrine falcons are the fastest creatures in the world and can reach speeds of more than 200 miles per hour when diving for prey. An endangered species, there are only currently a dozen nesting pairs of falcons in the county, meaning the new arrivals have brought the number up to 26, with the first pair finding a home in Hampshire in 1993. Exposure to pesticides has resulted in their eggshells becoming so thin that they cannot breed, but they have made a big comeback in recent years. And the piece is illustrated by 2 photographs, one a small one showing the great slab of the County Police Headquarters building, and the other one, slightly larger, showing Keith Betton and Richard Jacobs with the two chicks.
Pupils join in a village tradition. School children at Wickham CE Primary School are part of a drive to breathe new life into an old tradition. At Wickham's famous horse fair on Monday, the children were to be seen dancing on the platform usually reserved for dodgems. Traditional step dancers have metal on the soles of their shoes, but the resourceful Year 4 pupils have been dancing with coins stuck to their shoes. Head teacher Maria Ackland said, "We were delighted to be able to join with local gypsy and traveller communities to revive this energetic tradition at Wickham Fair, and are extremely proud of our young dancers." She said that the children have been learning to step dance with assistance of folk dance enthusiast Joe Harmer and fiddler Kath Watkins. Each year we include Wickham Fair in our local history studies, and this year our children's learning has taken on an entirely new dimension with step dancing. The children have thoroughly enjoyed learning and improvising steps in this local tradition, and we are honoured to be able to perform at Wickham Fair this year, Ms. Ackland added.
Adult learners flock to colleges for special week. In an economy where job losses and redundancies are all too familiar, never before has there been such a demand to retrain and reskill. So this week's Adult Learners Week saw colleges reporting more demand than ever to help support mature students wanting new skills and qualifications. The week-long campaign is aimed at celebrating the benefits of lifelong learning and showcases the opportunities available to explore the types of learning and training that are available to adults from all backgrounds. Colleges across the region are hosting their own events aimed at promoting what they have on offer to mature students. Southampton City College hosted its own Adult Learners Fair last Saturday, which was aimed at giving prospective students the chance to discuss their options with tutors. There was a chance to meet the qualified teaching staff and speak in confidence about any extra learning needs candidates may have. Eastleigh's Barton Peveril College was also hoping to attract adult learners to try some of its courses at a Try Before You Buy information and taster session at the Chestnut Avenue campus. Students were able to find out more about part-time adult courses, including the access to higher education diploma.
Brawl mars village's historic horse fair. Family feud thought to have sparked violence. A brawl erupted on the streets of a Hampshire village where thousands of people had gathered for an historic annual fair. Witnesses said all hell broke loose as the Wickham Horse Fair was getting into full swing. One man was hit on the head by a marble fired from a catapult during the violence in the centre of the village, where families had gone to enjoy a day out on Monday and see horses paraded for sale. Several men were left covered in blood after the street fight, which is believed to have been sparked by a family feud. Police were called to break up the brawl, which started at 11:30 a.m. Six men were arrested on suspicion of causing a fray and remained in custody. Two casualties were taken to hospital for treatment. Witness Ivor Porter said, "I saw two fellows having a go at each other. Two other fellows joined in, and then the police stepped in to break it up." Another witness, who wanted to remain anonymous, said, "One chap got hit in the forehead with a catapult." Bystander Debbie Grocott expressed her shock at what happened. "It could have hit anyone. It could have taken their eye out. A horse cart overturned at the same time. I thought the police were going to say, 'That's it.' The majority of people here don't want any trouble. It's always a small minority," she said. The rest of the day passed largely without incident. Despite the day's events, the fair's organiser, Bernice Wall, said the event had gone extremely well. "It's gone brilliantly. We work closely with the police and Hampshire County Council to organise it to make sure it does run smoothly. We appreciate very much the tolerance of the local people because it is disruptive." People had come from across the county to the Hampshire village to see the colourful tradition which dates back 800 years. As well as the equine community coming together to parade their stock, families also enjoyed fairground attractions and market stalls. The biggest and oldest horse fair in the country, it is an opportunity to view decorated shire horses, Shetland ponies, and spectacular bareback riding through the square, and is one of just two major horse trading events in the UK. Many stallions and mares were going at thousands of pounds, with one horse being offered for sale at £20,000. As well as the dozens of police officers, staff from Hampshire County Council and RSPCA officers were there to monitor the day. And the article is illustrated by two pictures. The upper one is of two horses being run through the centre of the square by some obviously young and fit men. And the other photograph is of a very large gentleman with blood on his face being escorted away by two police officers.
Tess has a nose for calming exam nerves. Exams can be a stressful business, but the University of Winchester has just the remedy for students feeling the strain of late-night revision sessions and those all-important final year papers. Their secret weapon, revealed last Wednesday, is a golden Labrador named Tess. Tess's owner, Charlie Mackay, a placement coordinator at the university, said, "It's well known that dogs are good at providing stress relief, and some members of staff here at the university suggested it might be a good idea to have a canine therapy room here during the exams. It's been absolutely amazing. I've been really surprised. We've had a regular flow of students come in, sit on the floor, and just spend time with her. There have been so many comments as to how Tess has made them feel. Lots of the students have said, 'Can she come and sit in our exam room with us?' But I think she'd be a bit of a distraction." Whilst it is Tess's first shift at the university, she's an old pro when it comes to stress busting. She's a registered pets as therapy dog. She has been assessed as working in environments such as nursing homes or hospitals or special needs schools, Charlie added. "She's absolutely loving it. She's a very calm dog, and so she has just really enjoyed the attention." The University of Aberdeen and Harvard Medical School already run similar schemes, and students at Winchester would like to see more of the same. Student Adam Clark, who's 21, said, "When it comes to crunch time, you're staring at a computer screen all day, and it's also nice to have a bit of feeling of home sometimes as well." Christina Course, a third-year business management student, is in the middle of her exams. She said, "I had an exam earlier in the morning, so to come afterwards and get to stroke a dog was lovely." And there's pictures of the two students with Tess and also one with her owner.
Record turnout at Town Festival. Alsford's annual celebration of watercress attracted some 12,000 people on Sunday. The sunbathed event has grown into one of the biggest in Hampshire and one of the few that celebrates a local product. The attendance is thought to be a record since the event started 10 years ago. Broad Street was packed for much of the day. Glenn Walsh grabbed much attention by munching his way through two bags of watercress in just 35 seconds, 15 seconds faster than the Guinness Book of Records title holder. The day began with a cavalcade of Morris men, street entertainers, musicians, local schoolchildren, and the king and queen of watercress, Aidan Morgan, age 6, and Kira Mason, 7, sitting atop a horse and cart to bring the first of the season's crop into town. Another attraction was Reading University student Lydia England, who made her stage debut cooking up a watercress and goat's cheese tart with walnut pastry, after being crowned the Great British Watercress Cook-Off Champion. Watkins and Foe, part of Hampshire Farmers Market, won the Best Traditional Watercress Product for their watercress and Stilton quiche. New to this year's Food Awards was the Best Retail Product, with Waitrose smoked salmon and watercress tartlet scooping top prize. The cookery demo unit was a non-stop attraction. two teachers, Catherine Watson from Sunhill Infant School and Emma Reeve from Sunhill Junior, battled it out in the Battle of the Pans competition. Both teachers had to produce an exciting, not forgetting tasty, dish using a bag of mystery ingredients, one, of course, being watercress. It ended in a dead heat, with Catherine producing pan-fried local trout with homemade watercress and tomato salsa, and Emma making chicken breast with watercress and cashew nut stir-fry. Local watercress farmers were pleased with the turnout. And again, there are 7 photographs showing all the wonderful events of what was, thankfully, a really sunny day.
Care provider launches round-the-clock service. A Winchester home care provider has launched a new 24-hour service for the city, Alresford and Eastleigh. Bluebird Care is extending its existing one-to-one service to offer round-the-clock help. The company provides dedicated personal assistance as live-in carers to help people with needs such as washing, personal hygiene and mobility. Norman Murphy, owner and managing director, said, "Our new 24-hour live-in care service really is the ultimate personal assistant for our customers and promotes our ethos of independent living in the comfort of your own home. It effectively removes the need for anyone ever to leave the home they love to go into a residential care home. No upheaval, no stress, but a care service that works around your individual needs, enabling you to remain in your own home, surrounded by familiar family, friends, and possessions." And it is illustrated by a photograph of a Bluebird Care personal assistant filling a hot water bottle for a client.
500,000 plus for detached houses. The average asking price for a detached house in Winchester has broken through the £500,000 mark for the first time. Property website Rightmove said the average price for a detached home in the city was £526,755. Meanwhile, terraced properties sold on average at £383,850 and flats fetched £228,171. The overall asking price in the city is £385,750, up 8% on last year. Winchester is more expensive than Kingsworthy, £335,057, and South Wanston, £334,171, but cheaper than Twyford, £619,735. The average asking price across England and Wales is £249,841 after a fifth consecutive monthly rise. The price surge comes as the City Council has launched its new affordable housing programme, the first in more than 25 years. The council is looking to build 300 more affordable council properties in areas including Abbots Barton and Stanmore.
Oh, thank you, everyone. And that concludes our Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. I'll just give you a reminder again that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 862 826. I think you might know this number off by heart now, but you'll have it again. 862-826, that's Lynn Parker. We say thank you to Irene Dowding and Bill Argles for editing our copy this week, and also to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. We also say a special thank you to our readers, Claire.
Bye-bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
Last but not least, Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address label inside the wallet. And I'll ask again if you would complete the AGM return reply slip for us. Have a very good week. This is a bank holiday weekend. We hope you enjoy that. And thank you for listening.